Welcome back to Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin, and part two of Who Killed Carol, Ascot, and Westforth. In part one of the episode Who Killed Carol, we went over the basic details of the brutal murder of 22-year-old Carol Beth Hilburn on November 14, 1970, in Sacramento, California. We also went over the circumstances that led to Solve Crimes presenting a brand new suspect to Sacramento law enforcement. If you haven't already seen part one of Who Killed Carol, you may want to go back and take a look at that one. In this episode, we take you along as Carol's birth daughter, Linda, visits for the very first time the place where Carol's body was discovered. On Linda's suggestion, we visited the site on the 50th anniversary to the day of Carol's murder. A short time afterwards, we talk with Linda about her experience being at the site as well as her hopes for finally solving her birth mother's murder. Before we get into the site visit and interview with Linda, we have something very emotional and exclusive to share with all of you from Linda herself. Trust me, you won't want to miss it. This is Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin. Before we begin, I want to once again point out a very unique aspect to this case. Linda is Carol's birth daughter. Other than the possibility of Carol holding Linda briefly after her birth, the two had never actually met. When Linda was in her early 20s, she sought out her birth parents only to find that her birth mother had been brutally murdered. Even though Linda had known most of her life that she was adopted, you can imagine how hearing this news must have hit her. As with most adoptive kids seeking birth parents later in life, Linda was no doubt looking to get to know her birth mother, to discover what traits they shared, to hear her birth mother's explanation of the circumstances that led to the decisions to put her baby up for adoption. Linda never got that opportunity, and it did bring up many emotions that would come up strong periodically throughout Linda's life, especially when Linda experienced life events like marriage and having children of her own. When Linda first reached out to us at the end of last summer, we all clicked, and she immediately entrusted Gavin and I with some deeply emotional things. One of those items was a poem that Linda had written to Carol during a time when she was deeply feeling Carol's loss and the manner of her death. Linda decided to lean into her feelings one night and wrote this poem while her family slept. Linda was also wonderful enough to actually read this poem just for this episode.
I can see you in a stranger. I can see you in my dreams. I can see you on a crowded street. I see you laying there weak. I see your eyes shut, your body beaten. I can't, though, see your future. He took your future from your young present. He stole our chance to meet in my someday. I can see me protecting you from your early departure, that you not leave us too soon. That may make me whole. Today, as just a portion of me that I am, I may be whole at the sight of you. Alive in my today. You see me from where you are, don't you? That gives me hope. I never got to see you. Oh, I'm wrong. I did see you. You saw me, then we said goodbye. At a moment, I knew you, I suppose, but I never met you. Oh, I'm wrong. I did meet you. You met me, then we said goodbye. I wonder now, did you kiss me, my soft cheek? Did you? Did you hold me like I hold you now? Did you even know how? Someone might have told you it would be wrong if you held me too long. You might fall in love with to whom you belong. It makes love and belonging my greatest challenge. All those I need to hold close, I push away with a haste. I beg myself to trust more, though it's difficult finding that belonging door. A tear, one in just a million I've had for you, nearly hit the floor. I stopped it with my hand, and now I'll wait for more. My journey through understanding is a trip I take alone. So you've held my hand a time or two. You have held my heart even more. Say you'll always love me. Say you'll be the one who meets me at heaven's gate. You're an angel to me, my very own special angel, Will you let me be yours?
So, Gavin, you know, this, we've been kind of involved in this case for a little while now, and it's been a very emotional case considering Linda's involvement and her connection with the victim, right?
And it sure has. In fact, this case really was kind of a side case for us, right? We noted that it had happened. We knew that it had happened, but we were so deeply dug into the Judy Hockery case that it was just something that we might take a look at until Linda reached out to us.
Right, because before that, like with a lot of these cases, there wasn't a lot of info on that case.
That's correct.
You know, she opened a lot of doors by reaching out to us, and, you know, we utilized her connection with the victim to get information, and she had some information that we hadn't, you know, didn't have access to. So yeah, it really, really turned into a, you know, much more complicated thing, but we got to know Linda and work with her and that kind of thing. So, you know, what's your take on the poems that we just heard? I mean,
you know, as I read them before, and as I listened to her actually reading them in her own voice, mm-hmm. the thing that came to me was just the struggle, you know, the difficulty in, I guess, wanting and deeply desiring your whole life to know who you are, to have a personal relationship with the person who brought you into the world. Right. We know that Linda has terrific parents who adopted her, but she right. wanted to know who she was. She wanted to have a relationship with her mother, and to find out in such a, I guess, obtuse way and just a sudden way that her mother had died and had died in such a, under horrible circumstances.
Yeah. And if people didn't really feel that, you know, we have an interview with Linda, a few videos ago on our right. channel, and I distinctly remember that she had gotten in touch with her maternal aunt and was told bluntly that her mom was dead, the aunt not knowing, I don't think, who Linda was, and then she was told by the aunt where she was interred, and she had gone there, and the people at the funeral home just handed her a newspaper article which totally in detail described what happened to Carol. So that's a pretty hard way to find those details out. And
it is a hard way. And it's really, well, it's beautiful to know that she let that out somehow in her yeah. own private time.
Right.
She let that out, and that she was willing to share that with us.
And she
let
wrote
us
it,
share it with everybody
many
else.
Moons ago. So that's why she told me when we recorded the audio for her, you know, reading the poem, she said, I'm not going to lose it. She goes, I've been reading these quite a bit. So I'm going to, you know, so she's kind of disconnected from it to the point where she can read it like that. But the info in it is pretty heavy duty.
It is. And, again, I can't thank her enough for letting us share that with the world. This
yeah,
is,
that was pretty big.
One of the, I think the biggest things that you and I try really hard to do is to let people understand that the people, our victims in these cases are people, and they're important, and they're valued, and they're loved. And, mm-hmm. You know, when somebody does something so egregious to somebody else, like a murder, they take away so much, not just from that person, but from everybody else.
Right.
It's,
I mean, look at how it's affected Linda's entire life. You know, I mean, regardless of how people feel, you know, nobody can really understand what it feels like to be adopted unless you've been adopted, right? You know, and some people are more sensitive than others. And Linda's definitely a sensitive person. She's got a lot of feels, this is what she's had to go through. You know, those emotions and what was in that poem she wrote, you know, many years ago, and she was going through those emotions, and I can only imagine. You know.
Yeah, and Linda is a sensitive person, which is what makes it so remarkable that she reached out to us. And then it was her idea to visit the site of where right. Carol was found on the 50th anniversary of her body being discovered with us. It's just absolutely yeah. amazing.
I mean, I distinctly remember, because it was powerful, the very first phone call we had with Linda, you and I were on the phone with her, and out of the blue, she said, would you guys take me to the site where it happened? And I just remember going, wow. I mean, I didn't even know what to feel. I mean, it was powerful is what it was.
Yeah, it was.
You know, but like you said, it's amazing that she, you know, entrusted us in something so personal. And that, you know, that footage is coming up next, and it's very emotional. And after we go to the site, I interview Linda in a couple different spots, and the stuff that she says is amazing. She's very candid and very open with us. And she knows that those are the things, you know, getting people emotionally vested in these victims, like how we present these cases, is really what's going to solve these cases. It gets people, you know, really into the cases and makes them think, and they talk about it and they share the video. And that's really, you know, these older cases like this, 50 years, that's how they're going to be solved.
It does. And it is. And Linda isn't the only one who has reached out to us on these old cases. This is proving to be effective time and again. Anyway, very grateful that Linda has trusted us with that. And we really hope that with her help, we can get this case solved.
Yep. Well, let's move on and show some video of the day that we took her to the site where Carol's body was found.
When we first met Linda, she asked a favor of us. She asked if we would take her to the place where her birth mother, Carol's body, had been found. Pretty heavy stuff. We were naturally very honored that Linda felt that comfortable with us, and we felt the heaviness of how that day would be an emotional one for her. At Linda's suggestion, we brought along a small crew to record Linda's visit to the spot that she had thought about nearly her entire adult life. No one, certainly not Linda, knew how she would react finally seeing it in person. Rio Linda was a small rural suburb of Sacramento in 1970, and it still is in 2021. Not much has changed here in 50 plus years, even though Sacramento's city limit is only a few miles away. One thing that has bothered Gavin and I is this. Why this field? Why not the dozens of fields between Lloyd Hickey's 40 Grand Club in North Sacramento and where he left her? We started this footage off at the nearest main road to give you a sense of how odd it seems that a killer would have driven so far back off of the main roads to dump Carol's body. Remember, in November, the killer would have had very little time to dump the body without being seen because the astronomical twilight began at 5:15 a.m. that morning. And by 6:45 a.m., the sun was up. It's possible that the killer was somewhat panicked since the sun was coming up and he had a dead body in his vehicle. He could have kept driving the back roads until he was out of eyesight of anyone. The fact that he left her only 30 feet or so from the road when he could have easily taken her deeper into the field may be because he wanted to just get out of there as the sun was coming up.
Enough for me.
What's going through your mind? You've had a lot of time to think and prepare for this moment.
Absolutely, yeah. She's flown away somewhere else, and I don't feel her here anymore, which is good. I don't need her out here.
Right.
Yeah. It's peaceful, believe it or not. Very peaceful. And it feels pretty good to be here. to connect with the spot.
Check it off your list.
Yeah, it was on the list for sure. Yeah, I'm grateful that I got to come. So, it's right here, right?
About 20 feet off the road. There's no one had any more specific coordinates, so it was just this field, and you know, there were fishermen used to park right in here, and then walk back through there over that brim, I think, and there's a river there that they used to fish at back in the day.
I'm ready to go.
So is this how you pictured it?
I'm ready to go.
Okay, all right, let's go.
So that was pretty powerful footage. I didn't really know what to expect. And it was such a bummer that you couldn't be there. I mean, it was.
I wish I could have been there.
I know, it was a big deal.
COVID, you know, kept me in the East.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, she certainly wasn't sure. I wasn't sure how she would react. And so it was, I knew it would be emotional. I mean, I couldn't imagine what was going through her brain. But one of the things that she talked to me about, and I want to get your opinion on it. We've talked about this before, is she was specific to why did he, when she was finally standing there in front of the field, she said, why did the killer drop her 30 feet from the road when he could have dragged her way out and she wouldn't have been found for a while?
The 30 feet actually isn't that far.
No.
Right?
No, it's not.
I just think he didn't care. I think he was in a hurry. Need to get rid of this body and off I go.
Well, that's what I told her, because I said, you know, this happened the same month, you know, 50 years ago to this day. And I said, and, you know, the sun starts coming up. So I was thinking that maybe he was driving around trying to find a place to dump her. So
what time was she last seen? Do you remember?
From what we saw in the police report, I believe she was last seen around 5 a.m. Because clubs back then didn't close at 2 like they do now.
So if she was seen at 5 a.m. and the sun's coming up around 6 or so.
Yeah.
Got to get rid of that body real fast.
And you have to factor in, and I hate to say it like this, but it took a while to bludgeon her the way she was bludgeoned.
Wasn't a 5 She was thing. Brutally beaten. Right. Just terribly.
Right, right. So he could have been pressed for time with the sun coming up and didn't want to be found.
I believe the fence that is shown in the videos and the photographs, I believe that was not there at the time.
No, it was not there, because remember, that's also the place where the fishermen used to park.
Right.
So the fencing was not there.
So he just went to that. I mean, it's kind of weird to go all the way. I've been thinking about this. It doesn't make any sense to drive all the way back to that field when there's so many fields that you've shown, there's just so many fields all over the place.
Right.
It just makes me feel that that's where they were. They were in Rio Linda.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know where to be honest with you, we don't know where he got her. We assume that it was at the club, you know, on Del Paso Boulevard. Cause somehow, some way she got to Rio Linda. Right. So we don't know for sure what happened after she left, you know, the club on Del Paso. Because there was a report we read, part of the report, the initial police report done by SAC PD, that stated that someone saw her leave with two men and another lady.
Yeah.
So we don't know if one of those two men, you know, was involved. They got cleared by police and they're now both deceased. They did get cleared by police. So we don't know if they.
It was kind of weird, though, because they left Sacramento area that day, right? They were gone. So,
right. And I don't know if they were from this area. I don't remember if they detailed that out. But I mean, they could have gone to like a late night cafe and the guy got her there. We just don't know those things. I mean, we wish we did. But as far as conjecturing goes, you know, it's kind of odd. That's why when we discussed the possible suspect Terry Carpenter,
right?
When we were digging into his past and we found that he had ties to Rio Linda, he had burglarized homes and businesses there. And he grew up in North Sac, which, as you know, is, you know, it's just a few miles away. So, if that was a fishing spot,
it's right there.
Yeah. He could have known that fishing spot. And maybe that was the reason why he went so far back. He could draw a dumper there. I don't know.
That's one of those pieces of circumstantial evidence that tied Carpenter to this murder. And there are so many pieces like that tie him there. So,
absolutely true.
I'm still solidly in the Terry Carpenter did this camp.
Are you?
I am.
Yeah. And we're still making a call out. If you know who he is or know somebody who might know him. I mean, he had family here in Sacramento area.
Yeah. Please help.
Yeah.
And either help to exonerate or continue to include him in the investigation.
That's right. Yeah. And he may not be alive. I mean, we have to factor that in when we're dealing with a 50-year-old case, you know.
Going to the site where my birth mother's body was left, there at Ascot, I think it's Ascot Avenue, on the 50th anniversary of her death, was important to do for me, to honor her, to actually visualize her there. Saying that, or that said, she wasn't there, and I knew that. She had flown. She's gone. What was significant and absolutely beautiful was that there was new life. We were able to observe some cattle and their calves walk right across the spot where it is believed that she was left after her demise, after her homicide. It doesn't close anything. It opens up for me more hope. I know I've talked about hope before, and it's always good to have hope for the other ladies whose lives were taken, and hope for their families to have some clarity. Maybe if they choose closure, to have closure. I did not do much to prepare myself for getting out of the car and walking over to the fence line. I've had a long time to, let's just say, unprepare or not prepare. Because I think if I prepare, then I'm going to have expectations. And I didn't have expectations. I didn't have any expectations of how I would feel. I just knew as I approached this opportunity to go to that spot, that I was going to allow myself space and grace, and that the people I surrounded myself with today on the 50th anniversary of her death would be the people that would allow me to be all the things I needed to be. When I approached the fence, I was doing pretty good. I was telling Rick that what really got me was the barbed wire. Rick asked me why it got me. It wasn't straw, it wasn't a stick, it wasn't the trees, it wasn't the smell in the air, it was the sharp point of the barbed wire. And I think he asked me why, and I said because it's sharp and it hurts. I didn't expect to find barbed wire there, but we did. As I approached the fence, I didn't anticipate feeling anything. I really felt that if I had prepared, like we had spoken about, did I prepare, I would have had expectations, and I didn't feel heaviness when I approached the fence. I felt peacefulness. So upon the fence, the fence that was made of steel rods and barbed wire, I didn't have any expectations of how I was going to feel, how I would be feeling as I stood there at the spot where she was left. I left myself a lot of space, as I mentioned before, space and the grace to be what I needed to be, and to
say again how thankful I am that I was with some lovely people that allowed me those two things, to be in a space, a safe space. Because I've had so many years of imagining what it would be like to be at that place, observing where she lie. I've probably have had a million scenarios, and today's feeling and today's vision and today's scene wasn't at all what I anticipated based on my years of it being in my head, the scenario. I was comforted again by the space and the grace that I've allowed myself, and the space and the grace that my posse has allowed me.
Okay, so you've been checking off a lot of boxes that have been many, many years in the making. You've been checking off some boxes lately, especially the last 2 days.
Yes.
So does it give you the sense of accomplishment and that you're headed in the right direction?
Yes, and absolutely without a doubt, I am not going to look back unless it's for referencing or research, but I'm going to stick this out.
Has this process the last couple months with everything that's happened, including today, has it motivated you? Has it, you know, are you feeling a sense of movement in this, you know, like movement toward maybe some sense of closure?
Oh, absolutely. I totally feel movement. And to be part of the movement, being an active member of this little team is satisfying. I feel accepted into the advancement of progress for the case. I believe that for many years I felt solo on this journey, and I've mentioned that before. I actually now feel embraced by more than just my family, my friends, my colleagues at work. They're cheering me on, they're cheering the team on, and they absolutely support everything that our efforts are doing.
Overall, if you could pick a word, or you know, two words, three words, whatever, that describe how you feel after the last couple of days, what's accomplished, you know, what's been accomplished, that kind of thing, what would those words be? How you feel?
Inward. Mindful.
Inward, like retreating inward?
No,
or
not at
inward?
All. Looking inward.
Okay.
And while I'm inward, I'm processing. It'll take me a while to take all this in. It's a big weekend, and it'll take me a bit to process it.
Makes sense.
Clarity will pop in when I least expect it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I and again, I'll mention the word hope. We may have some more help and with this, and that is exciting. It feels like a warm blanket. I've never felt the warm blanket like I have felt it now. I feel like with the help of Rick and Gavin, it's given the family and my friends tangibility. It's just not something in my it's not just my story. There's something tangible that they can actually chew on and see me in, and then begin to understand it a little bit better. I'll never expect them to know how I feel. A very good feeling that I've had of lately is that of my former husband showing amazing support, and I'm so grateful for that, because he spent 22 years down the road that I've been on, and he was a trooper.
Well, I'm sure he would like to see closure, not just for you, but just in general as well, right?
Yes, that's, excuse me, that is his personality is that, is of that, and he wants to see something that gives me feeling of peace. And I already feel peace, and that again is that warm blanket of support and the idea of the hope. So no, I'm incredibly grateful at this very moment as I sit here and begin to reflect, as two-thirds of my weekend is over, and tomorrow I'm looking forward to meeting Jan, who was once the roommate to my angel Carol, and hopefully we'll be able to maybe talk together, and hopefully she'll be able to give some light to you all, an insight into their life. I hope. It's been a long time, and I hope she can pull up some memories for us.
So if you look back to a couple months ago, mm-hmm. and you did a search, which you've done pretty much your entire adult life, a search for Carol's name, and you found this video, and when you sent that friend request and eventually got on the phone with us, what does that seem like, yesterday, or does it seem like years ago?
Oh my gosh, it's a rush. It feels like this morning. It feels like last week. It feels like yesterday. It feels like it just happened. It's been a very speedy process thus far. But I have to say or interject that is how my life goes. It's been that way.
Yeah. So it feels like kind of a, without putting words in your mouth, like a an emotional tractor beam pulling you forward.
Absolutely. Or a Hoover vacuum sucking me in. Well, maybe that wasn't the analogy you were looking for, but
no.
I put my hat on backwards and we're going on.
If you could say something to Carol after everything you've been through recently, what comes to mind?
Nothing super poetic, but what just came to mind quickly is, we got you, girl. We gotcha.
We will continue to work with Linda on Carol's case as information comes in. As we featured in episode 1, we have turned over this new suspect, Terry C. Carpenter, to the lead detective on Carol's case. So hopefully they will find a way to compare DNA or rule him out altogether. Naturally, this is still an open investigation. As always, if you know anything about this case, or if you know someone who may have known Carol, or if you know the whereabouts of Terry Carpenter, please visit our website at solvecrimes.tv and fill out our clue tip form. You can do that anonymously. You can also leave a comment below. Make sure you like this video and subscribe to keep up to date on this and the other cases that we're working on. This is Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin.